From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk idioms. They don't always make sense, but they don't always have to make sense to make sense. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petrus and Ross Petrus.
Well, hello, Ross Petrus in Toronto, Kathy Petrus in Armia. We need to shake a leg and jump into today's episode. Do you like that?
Fletcher, a brilliant segue, Fletcher, as always.
Thank you. Yes, it's the only idiom I could think of in this particular moment.
Okay, but now we're not going to talk about an idiom for a second.
Oh, okay.
Because we got a message from Irene in Toronto.
Oh, yes. Hello, Irene.
Ross, your neighbor, yes. Perhaps.
Yes.
Who asked a very simple but quite intriguing question. Why do we capitalize the word I? I actually really liked this question. Mm-hmm. So I know French, and I isn't capitalized in that. I'm currently studying German, and again, no capital I. Why is it capitalized in English? I am very curious to know. Wait a second. I got to tell you this. I have to give her credit on this. She cleverly kept the I lowercase when she said, I am very curious to know, which I thought was very clever.
I thought it was, too. I thought it was really clever. But also, there's an interesting little clue in here, Fletcher. Can you guess it right now?
No.
I know French, and the I concept of I isn't capitalized, and I'm currently studying German. And again, there's not capitalized, I mean.
No. I don't know what's going on here. I've never thought about this before in my entire life, so this is fun, Irene.
We have smart listeners, Fletcher.
Okay, Fletcher, the key thing here is in French, it's, what is I in French?
Je?
Right. There are two letters there, right? And in German, there are three.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we have something. And in English, a long time ago, English had ich or ich, which another two letters or three letters as well.
Yeah.
And in that case, it would not have been capitalized. What basically happened is in the age of later manuscript writing and typography, the I concept lost the C or the CH, and you had like a single letter standing alone, which looks really weird. Quote, graphically, single letters are a problem, says a type historian explaining what happened. It looked like something happened, like the typeface broke off from something or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So when it shrank to a single letter, they said, ooh, it looks wimpy. It doesn't look good.
That was my first thought was, you know, je and ich have more than one letter, but we don't capitalize A in a sentence.
Fletcher, that is very
we have to go now, Fletcher. That's a really good point.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that is my counterpoint. I get it. I think, I mean, like, especially now since we're used to a capital I, a lowercase I just there by itself would look strange.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, A, it's right there. We don't capitalize that.
Well, you know, Fletcher, you're such an annoying person in the back of class.
I'm so sorry.
I sat next to like someone like you in high school.
Yeah,
I wasn't happy.
We're going to move on to idioms right away.
I have an idiom for Fletcher right now.
You can't say that on air, Kathy. You can't say it on air. Yeah, we also got another letter that ties in really nicely with last week's episode when we were talking about words that should be banished for 2025.
It's Tim in NYC, and he said, if it's not too late, I'd like to offer my choice. Content. I love you, Tim. He said, someone can shove the most worthless garbage onto YouTube, but if they call themselves a content creator, they need to be taken seriously.
I think that is probably the best, most useless word of the year. That one, he's perfect on that one. It is awful.
You know what's funny is I actually come at it from the other side. He says, you know, somebody can put any kind of junk up there and call it content and they have to be taken seriously. I actually tend to take things less seriously if people are calling them content.
I think he's being tongue in cheek.
Yeah, I think he is.
Maybe. But like, that's a big problem for let's say, streaming services or whatever that are trying to distribute movies, or even public radio for that matter, calling what people are creating and putting out their content really devalues what they're doing and devalues the art of it.
Aldo, do you ever say the word content? And like, for, I do sometimes, and read it first as content.
Oh, yeah, sure.
A content creator. Become a content creator.
It's like, okay, that sounds great.
I guess that actually kind of is my goal, isn't it? To be a content creator.
I think that's all of our goals here. Okay, next we're going to go into idioms.
Yeah.
But before we begin this, I really want to put Kathy on the record. Kathy is famous in our family for really mangling idioms. Sly had, my wife had like this long list for years. And this is not just me noticing it, it's everyone noticing it. The most common, the most famous one of Kathy's is, he's a sheep in wool clothing, which I just love.
But it sounded logical.
But just to say that Kathy has not lost her touch, a couple of days ago, we were talking about a person we both felt was somewhat of a grifter. And apparently her mother, we found out later, she was a grifter too. So Kathy said excitedly, my God, the oak doesn't fall far from the Christmas tree.
What?
I'm going to repeat it. The oak doesn't fall far from the Christmas tree.
It was around Christmas.
Yeah.
Let's start with something different. So Fletcher, we're talking about idioms. What is an idiom? Do you know what an idiom technically is?
No, of course, because I don't know what anything technically is. But, you know, we're using a phrase that isn't logically true to mean something else.
You're really good.
He's good. Why don't you give Fletcher the technical definition?
Yeah, give me the technical.
Technically, it's a phraseological unit.
Phraseological.
Phraseological. Thank you, Ross. But unlike regular phrases, which can be taken literally, as you just said, idioms are not literal, they're figurative, in the real sense of literal and figurative, I might add.
They're colloquial metaphors,
okay.
The interesting thing is we looked at a couple of linguistic articles on idioms, and they have like a whole little science of them. They're saying, for example, like an idiom, the coinage begins with a stimulus. Then there's what they call a mass propagating agent, like a public speech or a movie that shows that idea or that idiom to a lot of people, or that phraseological unit to a lot of people. Then it's used, they call it by a lot of people, micro-propagating agents. During the,
this is what I started getting ready to scream.
During the dissemination stage, and then it's like noticed by a lot of other people where it's called, then it's assimilated. Then it's memorized retention. Then it's used expression, and then transmitted through a medium. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a proverb or a phraseme during this where it's no longer associated with this creator.
I have to say, though, I mean, I agree with that, but the mass propagating agent at the very beginning, I sometimes wonder a little bit, because I was thinking, as kids, we had certain things that I thought were just Ridgewood. Then I talked to other people, and it turns out that they were saying the same thing in California, and it didn't come from anywhere that anyone knew.
Mm. Other no, of than course the fact not. You may not know it. No, I think that's true.
But because that's what I'm saying. They're saying it's exposed to a lot of people by some public speech or a movie, which I understand. I mean, like catchphrases from like The Simpsons or Futurama or something. But I'm saying there's certain things that seem organic that I don't feel are that.
They are saying that though. They say that that many times you lose where it came from, and that could happen perhaps early. For example, I mean, I don't know. Now we're talking about mass propagating agents, and I'm not an expert on mass propagating agents. I'm just guessing completely. It could be something like we're unaware of where it came from, but everyone suddenly repeats it.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're talking about current idioms.
Yes.
Idioms that are still often used. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, I guess I am a little curious where this started. I mean, I get it. Rocket science is really hard, right?
But let's go with here. There was another very common idiom that preceded rocket science.
Brain surgery?
Yep. You got it.
Yes.
Now you hear a lot of people say it's not rocket surgery, right? To be cute.
I've heard that. We have that as a lot of us in our stupid quotations calendar. Yeah. Yes. There's actually something interesting, too. Before rocket science and before brain surgery, there are other idioms that you were used that are far more boring and dull to me.
Oh, tell me what they are.
Okay, easy as pie.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And then this one's more, this is sort of more interesting. It's easy as falling off a log.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. I know that one.
Yeah.
What was it, though? Who was the actress? Oh, shoot. She was in Sharknado. And
Kathy's quality film watching.
Yeah, I never saw Sharknado, mind you. But she said it's not rock science or something like
rock
that. It
science.
Was completely.
Wow.
And it was, I can't remember now. And it was like, you know, a geological illusion.
Yeah, well, you could say geology is difficult too. So, yeah.
It's very complicated.
When do you think it's not rocket science came about?
Well, you'd figure in
as a term.
You'd figure in like the, I don't know, the 1940s, 50s.
No.
And you'd think it came from science, right?
Yeah, actually.
No. They're not sure, but it seems to have come from most of the earliest citations of it's not rocket science came from football.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yep.
Okay, but like when did it happen? It happened, I mean, like it started in football. That's interesting. But like during the space race or whatever, right?
Nope. After the space race.
Oh, even
they're
later.
Basically saying the 1980s.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
And prior to that, it was brain surgery mm-hmm. in yeah. the 60s.
Mm-hmm. And the first one of the first references they have is from 1985, newspaper Daily Intelligencer for Pennsylvania. Coaching football is not rocket science. Interesting here, and it's not brain surgery. It's a game, nothing more. I mean, you can't get a better quote than that to yeah. talk about handing off the mantle of the idiom to the next one. I just love it. That's a great quote.
I love that person, whoever said it.
Oh, I know. Wow. There was an article in, it was a linguistic article talking about this idiom and idioms, and they tried to kind of make the case that rocket science actually preceded the football and it was used in science. But basically it was used in science as literally rocket science. They would talk about, you know,
yeah,
we're doing rocket science. And then they had one, they found one from, I think, 89, but that's after our wonderful football quote. And the guy said, one of the reasons you hear so much about LU 6.2, whatever that is that it's something new for IBM. It's not new for digital. Digital has been doing it for 12 years. It's not rocket science, folks. So it was used in science, but my claim is the guy could have been a football fan and heard the football thing.
Yeah, really. But that was also 1987, so.
Yeah.
I just want to add my friend Patty Ormsby, her husband. I remember one time, I hadn't spoken to her in years, and I said, how are you doing? She said, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. My husband's a rocket scientist. I was like, oh, yeah, so is mine. She said, no, he really is. Anyway, moving right along. Comfort food.
Food that makes you feel warm inside and is maybe helps you put on a few extra pounds, too.
When do you think it first entered the English language?
The 1970s.
Now, this is an interesting one, Russ, because I would argue that this first thing we have here is not right.
Kathy, I was just about to argue the very same point.
Okay, we have the fact that the term comfort food can be traced back to 1650, where in Don Quixote, or as some might say, Don Quixote, if they're doing spelling pronunciation, they say at the beginning, Quixote's niece are told to pamper him, quote, to give him things to eat which are comforting and appropriate for the heart and brain.
Hmm.
That, to me, is not comfort food.
No, it isn't.
It's not, it's not a phrase.
Not at all. I like to trace it back to 1966.
Aha.
When the Palm Beach, to use spelling pronunciation, Peach Post, used it in a story. Adults, when under severe emotional stress, turn to what could be called, quote, comfort food, unquote. Food associated with the security of childhood, like mother's poached egg or famous chicken soup. Now, that to me is comfort food mm-hmm. usage.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one's bogus.
Yeah.
They said, though, it was initially used in quotation marks, mm-hmm. and then it just caught on and it became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think I just know it. I mean, to me, comfort food now is a certain, is a standard. I'm not even sure it really goes into an idiom as much
yeah.
as... And also, in a way, they go. We talked about the definition of idiom, where it's figurative, not literal. And this one gets me because, in a way,
it's literal.
It's literal. It's yeah. basically food that comforts you. So I don't really. Is this really? Is this really an idiom, or is it really just a new concept that we've gotten at this point?
I'm curious. What are your comfort foods?
Well, you know what? We just had a blizzard, and I made a big pot of chili and a big dish of cornbread. So I guess that fits.
That sounds good, Fletcher.
Yeah.
That is good.
But, you know, I also sometimes I want to make a big old thing of biryani, too.
I like biryani, too.
Yeah, hot and sour soup when I'm sick is a comfort
food
for me.
That's for me, too, Kathy. That's why it's genetic.
But it's got to be, like, good. Like I miss that. I can't get that here yet in Armia or in Granada, for that matter. A real old-fashioned New York takeout sweet and hot and sour soup.
We have it here. It's fabulous. We have one here. I love it. And I hate to say it, but squid. But that's neither here nor there. I really like squid.
I used to hate that about Ross Fletcher. I got to tell you this. We'd be going for a walk and we'd be like, want a snack, comfort food or not. I don't know. And I would want like a candy bar or a bagel. You know, like Ross would want hijiki.
Yeah.
Or like kimchi or something.
Kimchi, I too. Like, I love kimchi.
No, yeah, no,
I love
this
kimchi.
Is wrong.
Yes. Okay, crunch time, Fletcher.
It's crunch time. Wow. Yeah. How in the world did crunch time start?
Okay, when?
Well, so when something's crunch time, it means we're really getting down to it. We're getting down toward the end where we need to take care of business. If we're talking about sports, you know, the game might be close and you gotta stop the other team and you gotta get a couple points yourself. If it's your job, then this is where you really gotta buckle down and finish things up, mm-hmm. right? When could it have started? Well, I cannot even imagine why something would be crunch. I don't even know what decade it would be. Is this the 20th century?
Yes.
Mid-century, whatever, 1950s. I was going to say like 1980s, honestly.
Actually, no. This surprised me because it sounded 50s. I got to go back to man in a gray flannel suit, Madison Avenue, advertising. It's crunch time. No, it came from 1930. The first evidence in the OED, mind you, mm-hmm. is 1933.
Oh, wow.
And it's a strange, I don't know why, Santa Monica Junior College newsletter, which is weird. And it's the vice president, I don't know, this sentence sort of amuses me, of this institution could have been seen around last Thursday, crunch time, smoking a pipe.
What?
That seems wrong, doesn't it?
I know.
Is this a typo? What?
There are a couple of other interesting things, though, from the this. There's another claim that the earliest real usage, and in fact, maybe that usage is kind of a fake one. I mean, you know, a random one, were from the 1960s in the LBJ administration. Life magazine.
Yeah, I see it's crunch time at the White House.
Yeah, although his closest personal ties are with the Senate, Humphrey keeps a list of 50 members who will give the administration the benefit of doubt in a crunch. Then LBJ foreign policy. They've consistently felt nervous about the U.S. support in a crunch. Walt Rostow, again, LBJ administration, talking about the Viet Cong. I think LBJ might go a little soft when you get down to the crunch.
Oh.
Why crunch? No, okay, let's take away the time and go back to the crunch here.
Sure, yeah.
Why crunch?
Why is it a crunch when you're in a bit of a tough situation, you're really getting down to it?
Yeah, why isn't it a crack or a uh-huh. pancake? I don't know, why crunch?
Well, there's some people saying, and again, this is really a toughie, but the American Heritage Dictionary of Idioms has it coming basically as a slang term in electronics and computer science. They're saying basically we've heard it a lot, crunching numbers.
Yeah, I know crunching numbers, but why is crunching numbers have to do with like it's, oh, because we've got to get this done right now.
Yeah.
We've got to get those numbers out like that.
You're in a crunch. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Interesting. And so crunch time then is the time when you're in a crunch. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I never thought about that.
No, it's enough to blow me away.
Yeah, boy, I was blown away. That could have started who knows when. That's 19th century, right?
Well, I was going to say literally the phrase blow away, to blow away, came from the late 1500s.
Oh, wow.
And they have an example, the blaste of ye Bernstein blew away his brain. Brain spelled, of course, B-R-A-Y-N-E. I think that's bogus because that's really just, it's really blowing something away. I mean, it's like, poof, there went his brain.
That's not
so
an idiom.
So I don't think
literal.
That counts.
Yeah, it literally blew it away. Yeah, it literally did.
Okay, that annoyed me that that came up when I looked for etymology. In the 60s, it was particularly during the Vietnam War, you had blow away came up again, but it was like you beat someone. It wasn't still like, whoa, that blew me away. It was again, we blew them away. It wasn't, okay, as literal as his brains were spattered on the, you know, tarmac or something.
But that's interesting because it is, we can see it right here beginning to evolve. It's really interesting. It's slightly literal and slightly figurative. And then it moved on into the current meaning that we know now.
But that wasn't until 74, which shocked me.
No, it wasn't.
The whoa.
No, it wasn't, because there was one I found here from 1988. Yeah, you're right, Kathy. I think you're right.
Well, I saw it at 74, like the whoa,
it
I got
blew me
blown
away.
Away.
You're right. You're right.
I don't know why I'm doing this, like, fake
that's really,
surfer
that's a really
accent.
Good accent here, I have to say. I'm very impressed.
Is it always related to, maybe not a literal explosion, but like, a forceful, because when I think of that blew me away now, I don't think of like an explosion or a gun.
No, not
something.
At all.
I think of,
no,
I think
but
of a
it,
very strong
it always
win.
Meant like a convincing win or a decisive. Yeah. It's something big. It's not just,
That concert really blew me away. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was a really great concert. Yeah. Speaking of concerts, we have another one.
Oh, I like this one. This was interesting. The term we're talking right now is mic drop.
A mic drop is when you have, it could be something that's really impressive. It could be something that really ties up your case for you. I mean, I guess a mic drop can refer to a lot of things, but basically, let's say that you are a comedian and you hit the final punchline really well. You drop the mic and you walk off stage.
Exactly. The literal, the OED has the, they say it's something definitive, particularly impressive, irrefutable, an achievement that cannot be surpassed or a statement that precludes response. And they have an example from the New York Times.
That sounds, it's so funny. I'm sorry, I'm interjecting. That sounds so stuffy
it
compared
does.
To what it is, doesn't it?
But it's a good definition because it really captures the whole thing. And they had a quote, her final high note on What a Little Moonlight Can Do was basically a mic drop, an audience slayer, which, you know, I think that pretty much says it.
Okay, when do you think it first started being used, Fletcher? This is an easy one.
My guess would be the 1400s.
I don't know. That's a little tough, though, that just that attitude. I mean, I want to say maybe even like the 1980s.
Perfect.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, indeed. They say, it's typical of anything when you look up word origins and stuff, they talk about the literal mic drop first. So they say, well, in the 1950s, some performers would
mic.
Literally
oops,
like,
I dropped the mic.
About.
Yeah, I know. You know?
But yeah, it was basically the 80s. And again, it was like something they said a lot of times. It was, they think the action became big with Eddie Murphy, oddly enough, in the 80s.
Okay.
And then it was rappers. But as a term, it became big in the 2000s.
The one thing I wonder about, was this going to last or not, this one? I'm wondering.
Mic drop, absolutely.
You think so?
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
I don't know. It depends on, you know, people are using those headset mics now more, right?
That's what I was thinking, Fletcher. That's exactly what I was thinking. And it's like dull as ditch water became dull as dish water, you know, because we don't see ditch waters and ditches anymore. And I'm wondering,
in 100 years or whatever, people are going to be wondering who Mike is and why he got dropped.
But I think they might still be using it, is my point.
Or maybe they won't.
See, I disagree with, because, I mean, like, they use, like, you still say dial or rewind. And there's no such thing, really.
No, actually, that's funny you say that, because dial the phone really does get me. I heard someone say, or
hang up. I still say
hang up. Hang up is one. I don't really say dial that much, actually, I don't think. But I do say hang up. Hang up the phone. And I don't think you would.
I don't say dial at all.
No, I don't think so either, actually. But I do say hang up. hang up the phone.
I actually don't call anybody on the phone anymore. So
I don't think this is the same thing as mic drop, though. Because
no.
Yeah, I mean we're talking about the terms used for a thing that we are using, you know, the phone. And
if
in 100 years we're not using the kind of microphone that you can drop, then are people going to...
I think it's going to go. I think for that reason it's going to go. Okay, Fletcher, jumping the shark.
Oh, jumping the shark.
I love this.
This is interesting because it is very much still around. And it's this one I know is based on Happy Days.
Very good.
Sunday, Monday, Happy Days.
Very nice. There was an episode late, I think, where Fonzie was water skiing and he literally jumped over a shark. And so people say that, you know, that's the moment when things got way too ridiculous. You know, things were trying too hard and nothing was really ever as good anymore after that.
Wait, we have to add that he was wearing swim trunks and his leather jacket.
Of course he was. Yes. Of course he was.
This one is interesting because we just talked about drop the mic, and this is actually in favor of Kathy's point. I think this one may last.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, you know, now have never seen Happy Days and never want to see Happy Days, but they still may use the term jump the shark. And one thing going further back to our discussion of the theory of idioms, I think one reason why this may last is because it's very evocative. It really sticks in your head. Mm-hmm. You picture it.
Mm.
And I don't know. I mean, this to me might last, and the meaning might last too, even though we don't really... remember.
I think that you don't picture it. I actually am going to disagree with you. I think that if you don't know the Fonzie angle, which many people will not, I think just like the phrase is just somehow, it's got a tooth.
Oh,
like
I agree with you.
When you sand something, you know what I mean?
Or as sharks have teeth and they have very, sandy skin.
I do that
skin.
Deliberately.
And the skins used to be used for sandpaper. So you
but
can get right above that.
I mean, it does have tooth.
Oh, I agree with you. But also, I should add that when I said that, I didn't think people are picturing Fonzie in a leather jacket jumping over a shark. I think the idea of shark just is evocative. You think of it. And for some reason, it just sticks with me, even if I don't know the meaning of it.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying. I just have to, though, I've got to say, though, I found the quote. Richie Cunningham, Ron Howard, was talking about it, and I just love this. He said, this is his quote, "I remember Johnny Most, who played Ralph Malph, and I sitting there looking at the script. Johnny was really upset. He said, 'Oh, man, look what our show has kind of devolved into. It's not even very funny. And, you know, Fonz is jumping over a shark.'"
That's good. I like that.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.